update on irrigated lands, water quality program in our North Coast region, and statewide grazing program. It just kind of rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah, really. You struggled a lot with that title.
Thanks, Patty.
Okay. You can go ahead and do it. Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Ben Zabinski, Regional Water Board staff. I work in the TMDL unit, but I also work on non-point source issues. And I'm going to be giving an update on the development of the water quality compliance program for discharges from irrigated lands in the North Coast region. We started developing this program as part of the Klamath TMDL implementation to address non-point source pollution from agriculture in the Klamath Basin. In June 2010, I gave a presentation on the proposed work plan to develop a program that was limited to the Klamath Basin. As we began to implement the work plan, staff reconsidered that limited scope in light of the need for a region-wide approach, and we are now recommending that the program be developed for the entire region. In this presentation, I'll explain the reasoning for the proposed change. I'll also give some background on the different types of land use, agricultural land use around the region, and how this program fits in with other existing and planned programs. And then finally, I'll give an overview of the project tasks for developing the program and describe our planned initial outreach to stakeholders in the region. Next slide. So there is a region-wide need to address waste discharges from agricultural operations in the North Coast region. The state non-point source policy requires the regional boards to develop regulations to address all non-point sources of pollution through permits, conditional waivers, and or prohibitions. The regional board adopted a conditional waiver for agricultural discharges in 1987. The legislature sunsetted that waiver in 2003. The proposed agricultural program will provide coverage for all discharges associated with irrigated agriculture in the region, and along with the recently adopted U.S. Forest Service waiver and the proposed dairy program, will bring the regional board close to fulfilling the mandate of the non-point source policy with regards to agriculture. The program is also necessary to implement TMDLs and 303D listed waters. The proposed program would serve as implementation for TMDLs around the region where agriculture is identified as a non-point source in the TMDL analysis. Next slide. So this slide shows the previous scope of the agricultural program and the revised scope that staff are now proposing. The previous scope, as presented in June 2010, was limited to the Klamath Basin, but included discharges associated with irrigated agriculture and all types of grazing, both irrigated pasture and dryland grazing. So the proposed revision includes expanding the geographic scope from the Klamath Basin to region-wide, but limiting the scope of land use to only irrigated agriculture, including the irrigated pasture. So dryland grazing would be removed and addressed through other programs, both existing and planned programs. So the major land uses that would be included in the program are, the major land uses are irrigated row crops, irrigated pasture, vineyards, and orchards. The program will address discharges from these irrigated lands to waters of the state. There are several reasons for revising the scope. We're recommending this expansion to region-wide in order to address all irrigated agriculture at the same time. We want to have the same basic requirements for irrigated agriculture, but allow for flexibility and make the program adaptable to local conditions, since we're doing this for the whole region. The other reason is to make better use of staff resources. We started thinking about how large of an undertaking the stakeholder process would be, even in just the Klamath Basin, and decided that it's a better use of staff time to develop a single region-wide program, as opposed to separate programs for each watershed. The other recommended change is to remove dryland grazing, as I mentioned, and this will focus the program on discharges from irrigated agriculture, which in general present a greater threat to water quality than dryland grazing in our region. We also considered that much of the dry land grazing in the region is already being regulated through existing programs. We have the U.S. Forest Service program, and also State Board is coordinating a statewide approach to grazing on all private lands. So I'll explain more about these existing programs and the statewide approach. First, I want to take a step back and go over the distribution of agriculture in the North Coast region. To give you an idea of the ag communities, their relative acreages, and hopefully this will explain why we're proposing this region-wide program. The acreages shown on here on the legend there are only approximate, and you know, we want to refine those estimates as we continue with our stakeholder outreach. So land uses in the region can be divided into four types of agriculture. We have dry land grazing or non-irrigated grazing land, which is represented in green as grassland on the map. The other land uses are irrigated crops and pasture in orange, vineyards in purple, and dairies in blue. Dry land grazing represents the largest acreage and is kind of dispersed throughout the region. There's significant irrigated pasture in the Scott, Shasta, and Butte valleys. And if I had that pointer right there. Can you bring it up? So let's see if I can get this. So we have the Scott, Shasta, Butte right there. And then we have row crops in the Tule Lake area, which is here. And this is the Siskiyou-Modoc line here. There's also lily bulb farms in Del Norte County, which is represented here. That's more irrigated agriculture. There's also smaller row crop operations throughout the region. And vineyards are shown in purple, and they're primarily in Sonoma and Mendocino. There's also scattered vineyards throughout the region, too. And dairies are in Humboldt and Sonoma counties. And so there's the Humboldt. And Sonoma's down here. It's just covered up. That's around the Laguna. Okay, so now that you've seen this map, on the next slide here, I'm going to show you our approach to dividing up these categories into different programs and where the irrigated lands program fits into our overall region-wide approach. So we're dividing the programs to address land uses in three categories. One program would include irrigated lands, which is the program I'm presenting on. Dairies and any irrigated lands associated with the dairy will be addressed through a separate program that is currently being developed, as you saw the presentation earlier. And the remaining agricultural acreage is this dispersed grazing land, and this is the non-irrigated grazing land that was removed from the scope. So for this land use type, we're not proposing a region-wide program at this time, but we do have existing regional board programs that address this land use. First, we have the conditional waivers in the Scott and Shasta Basin that were adopted with those TMDLs about 5 years ago, and they address all types of agriculture. And the Scott and Shasta Basins will be coordinated with this larger program, but they will remain somewhat distinct in their requirements. The next existing program is the U.S. Forest Service conditional waiver that was adopted last year, and this includes conditions for grazing allotments, which are all non-irrigated. And then between these two programs, we're covering a pretty good portion of the region, and the remaining acreage will be addressed through this statewide approach, which is on the next slide. So the State Water Resources Control Board staff, in collaboration with the regional boards, have begun this development of a statewide approach to grazing. And this will provide some level of consistency among the regional boards and address many of the impaired waters in a more efficient manner. The approach is only in the initial stages, and scoping the project is underway. It's our expectation that it will address dry land grazing and fill in the gap in our region created by this recent change in the scope. The statewide effort may result in a statewide program for grazing, or it may be a coordinated effort among the regions. So there's uncertainty as to what direction that's going to go. The effort's being led by the Lahontan Regional Board staff, and that's South Lake Tahoe. We're staying involved with the process to ensure that the issues pertaining to North Coast ranching communities are considered. And the state board goal is to complete this program in 2 years, and that would match up with our schedule for the irrigated lands program. Okay, and I'm going to switch back to the irrigated lands program. Again, this is region-wide and would address all discharges from irrigated lands except pasture associated with the dairy. You know, there's a lot of different land use in the region, and coordinating the development of the program and providing opportunities for stakeholders, it needs to be carefully planned out. And to meet this challenge, we've contracted with the Center for Collaborative Policy out of Sacramento State University, and they're going to be assisting us with the stakeholder process. Which they specialize in stakeholder facilitation and planning. And we're working with CCP and have developed an initial outreach plan, and we've identified some stakeholders. We'll soon be assembling stakeholder groups that will meet to develop the program, and CCP is going to facilitate those meetings. Next slide. So we developed this initial stakeholder approach. Oh, you got it already. Okay. With CCP, and here's some of the elements of that. We're going to continue to have informal discussions with stakeholders. We've been talking with producers, environmental groups, local government, regulatory agencies, and tribes. The next step is to send out a survey that will identify stakeholders, see who's interested in participating in the development of this program. And from there, we can refine our mailing list. We'll form these representative groups, and that'll provide a means for stakeholders to have input into the program development. The stakeholder group process will be a transparent process and will include members that represent the varying interests and perspectives. And we're also interested in hearing from board members through this process, and we're going to plan to have workshops and board updates. Okay, I also want to mention that we've been coordinating with other regions. Central Valley and Central Coast have irrigated lands programs for about 7 or 8 years now, and they're both undergoing renewal of these programs. We met with the Central Valley staff to discuss their successes and failures of their approach. Also, San Francisco Bay region is developing a conditional waiver program for vineyards in the Napa River and Sonoma Creek watersheds. So we've been participating in their public meetings, and we're going to continue to coordinate with them as our program involves many of the same stakeholders, and we want to make the programs consistent where we can. So here's a list of tasks to develop the program first. With the help of the Center for Collaborative Policy, we've developed a stakeholder involvement plan, and we're conducting initial outreach, and we're going to be sending out those stakeholder surveys. We'll form the advisory groups, we plan to hold public workshops, keep stakeholders updated, and then when we have the draft orders, we'll begin the public review and comment period, response to comments, make revisions, and prepare for the board hearing. And then I have this on a timeline too. And there's 3 stages, outreach, development, and public review. On this slide is outreach and development. Outreach includes initial meetings with stakeholders, the surveys advisory group. This lasts through about August 2011. Then continuing on to the second stage in September 2011 is the development of draft orders, which involves the meetings with the advisory groups, holding public workshops, updates to the board. Final stage is public review period leading up to adoption. This will take about 6 months. Starting in July 2012, we have a 45 to 60 day public comment period, response and comment to the board hearing. You know, this is the timeline we're aiming for. I have to caveat this by saying that, you know, agricultural programs in other regions have taken longer than expected. And, you know, we're going to know more about the effort that's going to be required once we start gathering more information and hearing from people and figuring out exactly what the process is going to look like. So that's it for my presentation. Please don't hesitate to contact me. You know, I'm interested in hearing your ideas as we move along. That's our website is up there, and you know, we've been keeping our website updated. It has its own page for the development of this program. You can get to the webpage if you just go to our homepage, which is waterboards.ca.gov, North Coast. So you have to remember all that other stuff. You could just there's a link right on the front page. There's also a mailing list to subscribe to, and we'll use that to send out information. Thanks for your time, and I can take questions and comments.
Thanks, Ben. You know, it strikes me in getting your presentation today, and it seems like the major components of the process in which you're developing this. You know, we've got the outreach, the workshops, the review, the draft. It's kind of how we kind of procedurally go through things to develop these programs.
Yeah.
And from what we've heard, particularly over the last 2 days with our timber tour yesterday, with our dairy discussion today, to me, it seems that we have identified ways of being able to work with individual landowners or maybe at a smaller group rather than a region-wide process to work collaboratively and try to get information and to work with folks to really nail it.
Yep.
And it seems that, you know, the framework that you've outlined kind of falls into how those started, and then as we went through those processes, there had been some flaws that had been identified or maybe some criticisms, and then we figure out a way to work through it, albeit a little bit more clunky. Is there a way to take and learn from what we are just gathering from those two programs and either adopt components of that strategy to help you move farther or to move ahead quicker? You know, I'm just nervous about region-wide. That just it's for something like this, it's kind of scares me. So,
well, I'm surprised you said move ahead quicker. I don't.
Quicker might not be the right word to use.
Don't take as many missteps.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think there is a significant difference between what we've laid out and the way that the dairy program and I think the NTMP. You know, that there's a significant stakeholder process built into this where we're going to be forming advisory groups.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not sure that was, it's going to be formal advisory groups that we'll be meeting with and get their input earlier in the process, throughout the process. So, and it's not necessarily going to be one group. I mean, I don't think that is the way to go,
given you could do it with one group.
The different communities and like how far apart everything is.
You bet.
So there is going to be that, we do kind of have to break it into the different communities in some way and have smaller meetings. So yeah, I hope to do that, and I think that that's the key, is getting, as opposed to, I don't want to, but just what I've learned from those two others is to, I don't want to wait until we release a public draft to then hear comments.
I'm not trying to be critical in any way of the framework that you've laid out, and I mean this is how we do business.
Well,
but
well,
I,
I'm
you
saying
know, just
that's the difference. I think there is more opportunity maybe for earlier input
to be able
and,
to plug those
to
in because you're early enough in the process where you can work those in.
Yeah.
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 Good.
So I hope that works. It's pretty ambitious though to deal with the whole region.
Mr. Corbin.
Yeah, I just wanted, my understanding is the State Board will be taking on dry land grazing activities, so it's not too important, but under your region-wide approach, you have in parentheses not irrigated, and then you had as an example the Scott and the Shaston. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think I've been on tours there where tailwater's been, and I believe there are substantial diversions as well as groundwater pumping. Can you clarify that point?
Yeah, I mean, that table showed how we're covering dry land grazing, and the Scott and Shasta conditional waivers cover all types of agriculture. So dry land grazing is included in those waivers.
It's a more generic category. Thank you for clarifying
these existing
that.
Programs, yeah.
So. Did it?
Yeah.
Good. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Norton.
A couple questions, Ben. That December 2012 date came out of the Klamath TMDL, correct?
Right.
So that's kind of a hard and fast date we got out there. Not kind of, sort of, but it is. We said we were going to do this by 2012 December.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we carved that out. In fact, I believe we had some criticism as that was a long time. I admit I look at our regional map, and this is a fairly dispersive program. I mean, you've got irrigated ag in Tule Lake Basin.
Mm-hmm.
You've got lily bulbs in Smith River,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sonoma County vineyards. It's it's all over the place.
Yeah.
And in the stakeholder process, too, you're talking a very diverse group of stakeholders here. I would just raise my concern at this point that looks kind of daunting to me right there. And I hear that from you.
Yeah.
Carved off grazing has been carved off because it sounds like the state board's moving on that front. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, that's a daunting program here. And I look at it from here and I think, okay, 2012, December sounds like a while, but it's really not. So if you program this out, let me just ask you and expand a bit on your stakeholder outreach and who you going to go to and at what threshold do you get into this? Because, I live in Sonoma County, as do you. You know, I mean, we've got everything from little dinky vineyards now to big ones, and it's true with true with grazing, irrigated grazing. It's true with a lot of these things. So, you know, I just don't want us to I've raised concerns through the TMDL process that we drop staff off the airplane, parachute them into the watershed, and we've done that with success a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of the opposite way in that, you know, you are taking on as the main staff person with others, I assume, to try and cover a region-wide permit here. And I'm just voicing concern from here that this is a lot to chew on in a short period of time. And because it's built into the Klamath TMDL, especially, can we do it? Can we get there and be effective at doing so? That's a huge question.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we can.
Even for me, and I'm sunny side up. I mean, you know, the thing is
it does look like a lot. I mean, but you know, we do have the existing programs that are helping. I mean, the Scott and Shasta are two huge irrigated ag communities, and we have, you know, two programs that are ongoing there. You know, Tule Lake is going to be a big piece, as well as the vineyards. I mean, we have, you know, we have Region 2 to go off of. I mean, they're doing their vineyard program right now, so that's going to be helpful. And it's true. I mean, we haven't had a lot of contact with, you know, the lily bulb farmers in Del Norte and Tule Lake, so that's going
to By the way, I used to live in Tule Lake, and I used to farm up there. And, you know, Tule Lake's interesting, and so is Butte Valley and all those basins. You know, they're just really different up there, and mm-hmm. they are part of our region. They're part of this region, but you know it's you know from a look from purple in Sonoma County to the orange and green in Modoc Siskiyou, and it's Moline Siskiyou up there. I just look at this and I think, wow, this is going to be a huge thing, and I just caution that, you know, I know it needs to be done. I really do. I'm trying to wrap my head around this thing.
I think we all are. It certainly is a challenge, but there we just see some opportunities for efficiency as well by expanding the scope to the whole region, and you know, opportunities for the stakeholders to have a more consistent process across the region, and I think not to be able to address everything in a little more timely manner and. You know, address some of our impaired waters where we do see, you know, potential sources of pollution from irrigated lands. But I will also second, I think, what I'm hearing here of that, the concern about the timeline.
Well, here's a question, Rebecca. Years. If it was built into Klamath TMDL that we would do that in that mm-hmm. time period. So, Ben, you probably rightly, wisely cautioned that, hey, you know, this could take longer. And, you know, okay, granted. But if it goes, what happens with Klamath TMDL if that slips? Is there a consequence to that? I mean, the thing is, even so, that we had started with this as being a Klamath Basin waiver process, and today you're coming back and saying you think it ought to be, for these reasons that you stated, a base or a region-wide process. And you have some valid points, absolutely. And in doing so, okay. But if we do that, if we get out of Klamath Basin, can we do that if it does creep? Do we have to reopen the Klamath TMDL, or is it a problem there?
No.
No?
The only problem is that, you know, we said we were going to do it, and we mean to. To me, the advantage of this, I too share the concern about timeline. But what became pretty clear, to at least from my view, is that we need to treat everyone in agriculture basically in some kind of a similar framework. And we just keep finding ourselves, just looking at Shasta and Scott, we've got two different frameworks, and it's making us crazy. And if we go ahead and just go into one basin and come up with a framework and then move on to the next, we're going to have a whole bunch of different approaches to agriculture, which is impossible to administer and not fair. It doesn't create a level playing field. So at some point, we might decide to pull some of these things off and say, set vineyards aside and let's finish Klamath, because we've got enough of a framework that we know what we want to do, we know what the approach is, we know how we're going to do it. We've been able to engage all of the stakeholders to get that framework in place. And to me, that's what we get out of this region-wide approach, is we get a consistent framework where everybody knows that this is what we're doing. We form our technical advisory committees. Everybody has an input into our thinking about how we do the regulation, as opposed to formulating something up in Klamath and then coming down and talking to the vineyard folks in Sonoma, and they're just going to say, what? So, it's an impossible balancing, but this just seems like the best cut. And my sense is that we may, as we move ahead, get a framework based on region-wide technical advisory committees, stakeholder groups, and then we may end up just having to set some of them aside and say, you know what your framework is going to be, but we're going to go and finish maybe Klamath first, because that we have a basin plan deadline on. So I think there still is some flexibility on the end game.
But by the way, I do like the idea of, you know, consistent application of process, because I went with you to the Scott, and the Scott is different than the Shasta and how it's regulated, and you do end up pulling your hair out when you go over the hill, I would imagine, in some form. And in fairness, that the agricultural land base, while fairly diverse, has some real similarities to it. And I think that there's some, you know, there are some efficiencies to be had by going bigger than smaller on this.
Well, and it's not, we're not even at the point to say what kind of BMPs. We're asking the basic questions of, do people need to enroll? Who needs to enroll? What kind of off-ramps are there for people who have low threat discharges? So those are going to be the same no matter what kind of agriculture you're doing, because they're sort of philosophical approaches to how we approach the regulated community. And so, for instance, if we decide we want to do a prohibition and let people, you know, so it's really clear that people who aren't discharging or have a low threat discharge, they've got an off-ramp, they don't need to enroll. I mean, that's a huge, big conceptual piece. So I'm actually way up at a much higher level here of not worrying yet about what kind of best management practices are going to need to go into place, because I think that's going to come later.
Yeah, and I'm not necessarily trying to get down in the mud on this thing. At the same time, though, you know, I recognize I lived in Tule Lake, and in the winter up there, it's so darn cold you got to go somewhere else. At least I did. You don't grow anything up there in the winter, but it's very, very different than Sonoma County, where you do have winter activities, and then vineyards in Sonoma County are drip irrigated for the most part. I don't know of any irrigated vineyards that are, at least not very many that I know, that are sprinkler irrigated except for frost. So it's very different, and there's climatic conditions. There's everything going on here. I think you've served up a pretty good plate of stew here, and it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. I don't know. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. I think it is a good idea in many ways. I think that it is going to be quite interesting. And by the way, we do leave the Scott and the Shasta standing alone. Do we wrap them into this?
Yeah, I think. Well,
because we have a waiver timeline in Scott and Shasta that differs from 2012.
Well, my understanding, and feel free to jump in, Matt, if you'd like. Because of the timeline of the expiration dates for the Scott and the Shasta waiver, they're probably going to move ahead to be renewed in some form to handle that expiration date. But then as this program rolls in, we want to incorporate those watersheds as well, or at least consider it. Again, trying to get the consistency across the state is, you know, one of the benefits of doing this scope. And so that's kind of, we're looking at, they may have their, you know, having to deal with the renewals sooner, but then being involved in this more regional.
One thing I was going to mention, too, and then I'll stop, is that I know Central Coast Region 3 went through or is going through this. I don't think it's been that easy for them, and yet they have a fairly unique land base and agricultural base down there, too. I did see California Cattlemen's Association put out a grazing program type conceptual thing, and I thought that was very good from the grazing side. I would encourage you to look at how other regions, and you mentioned that, Ben, that you're doing that, and seeing how Region 2, I think they are ahead of us on that vineyard development for Sonoma and Napa County. So.
Yeah, and I didn't mention, I don't think, that this group, CCP, was the group that brought Region 5, Central Valley, through their process. And they came up with a programmatic EIR for their program, and then they're going to start developing the orders. But they conducted that stakeholder just within the last couple of years. So that's helpful, too, as far as the development goes.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to clarify with the executive officer. You said you wanted to come up with a common framework, and I can understand that, and common off-ramps. But it is a little scary to me to have a 2012 date, and we don't even have the basic regulatory framework laid out before we get down into the details and the particulars. I also did want to say, in regard to sediment, we tried, and I don't know whether this is analogous or not, but we tried doing a general sediment amendment, and we really found when we could bear down on county roads, when we could bear down on silvicultural roads, ranch roads, as sectors, that we're able to digest it better and do a better job. So I just think the vineyards are going to be their own ball game at the end of the day, because it's such a different agricultural process.
And I agree when it comes down to what they actually are, but they don't want to be left behind in the discussion.
Yes.
And so, I mean, they've been pretty clear in discussions with me that if you go up to Klamath and all your meetings are up there and you come up with a framework and you want to then put us into that framework, we are going to object to that. Right. So I don't know what the right answer is. There probably is no right answer.
If I could, Matt St. John, your staff. My vision, it is certainly an aggressive schedule that was dictated by the Klamath. I think our decision to go region-wide for irrigated ag really is the only practical thing for us to do, given our staffing resources, but also our regulatory requirement to develop coverage for irrigated ag sectors. And my vision is that by December 2012, what we're going to be offering is a framework. What are the minimum monitoring reporting requirements for an irrigated ag program? And that's the evil level playing field concept. Within that, there's going to be modules that are commodity specific, perhaps vineyards, lily bulbs, or whatever else. And then there may be sub-basin-specific modules, Scott and the Shasta, as examples. They will fall under this overall umbrella of an irrigated lands program that's for the entire region. Some of those modules, the specifics, will be developed through monitoring reporting that those sectors have to come back to us and report on. But frankly, I mean, again, from the staffing resources standpoint, it puts it back to those communities to provide information to us that demonstrates the practices that they're doing and how that's protecting water quality. I don't know if that helped or confused.
Well, I think it certainly points out, Matt, that this is going to be a work in progress. I mean, some of this is a process of discovery, and that's always true. Right? And so with the intent from here to get a region-wide permit for irrigated lands, ag lands, okay. It is a process of discovery of how to figure that out. And maybe those off-ramps are what you're looking for to figure it out and do it better as you go and to try and manage some of just the dispersive nature and the difference in the ag base that you're talking about here.
Mr. Chair, one thing that I would offer as well as we as staff are conceptualizing this is we would, I'd very much like to hear from you about how you would like to be involved and along what kind of a time frame for us to report back to you, or do you want to participate in some of the discussions as we conceptualize this? Maybe not to answer now, but to think about and let us know how you want to be engaged, because this is a really, really, really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want us as staff to go out and come up with some grand idea and you say, after we've spent hours conceptualizing it, say, oh, nice try, kids. So I'm really extending the offer, and how you want to engage in that development process is probably going to be critical to its success.
No, it's well taken, well received. I think we all have a vested interest in that. I'm a little hesitant to just throw a date out right now and say, get back to us at our next meeting. It's not necessarily fair to you, but, you know, as we sit here and, you know, throw our questions out and, you know, what we're trying to wrap our head around, you've been trying to do that for a couple of months already, so I appreciate that. And, you know, me for one and probably my fellow board members are big fans of your work, and we know if someone's going to pull it off, you guys are going to pull it off. So we've got faith in your ability to do that. But it's, you know, I think we're unanimously nervous about the timeline, which I know you guys are too. So how we make that happen, it sounds like you've gone through a couple of the decision-making processes. At least this is, you know, if we're going to get this going, we're going to have to go down this route. And you're hearing from the community as well, you know, just like you're saying, the vineyards are saying they want to be part of discussions that are going on up in Klamath and possibly vice versa. So that ball may already have set itself in motion. So I'd entertain anything else that my other board members have to say about when might an appropriate time to check in would be, or we can just get back to you on that, just knowing that this is a high priority and you're working on it.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Just looking at the timelines that you've set up for yourself, we're really taking this public, as I understand it from your timelines here, sometime in the next 60 to 90 days. No?
No, 2012.
We're in 2011.
So okay, we... But for 2011, we are doing outreach to stakeholders, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, but that's
and
not...
And so between May and August, we are outreach to formation of advisory groups. I would suggest, at least the answer to your question is from the executive officer, is that perhaps after we've been halfway, three-quarters, something like that, through this process,
yeah,
we will have, as will you, a much better idea of where the stumbling blocks are, if they're to be there. I absolutely share the concern that 2012 is a really early date for this, but if it's going to go smooth, we should know it, that there's not any great big elephants in the way by then. And if they do show up, then I think you got to rethink the 2012.
Well, I think in the next few months we are definitely going to have a better idea of what our technical advisory committees are going to look like. If, you know, kind of an idea of who's really interested in participating at you know, more fine level with us, and if they are going to be commodity based or regionally based, you know, or locally based, or you know, across the whole region. So. Agreed. You will have a better sense of that in a few months.
So as soon as we know where those elephants are, then we'll let you know.
Mr. Corbett.
Well, my advice to staff would be to give us periodic updates that don't even have to be formal. They don't have to have language. But where I am is it's so tentative and so confusing, actually. I don't know. If someone asked me where it's going to be in 2 months, I couldn't tell them. So I think what I'd do is just check in so that we sort of see how you're sorting these issues out, and that would be really helpful. And then, you know, as board members, we can start engaging, okay, if you go down that path, here's the implications or not. But and there's no point forcing you folks, and so just whenever you think you're making some progress, let us know and talk to us a little bit.
Mr. Chair, I think also that this is a really big undertaking, and once the public becomes somewhat aware of it, not only will you hear from them, but we will probably hear from them, and that may be the thing that triggers a complete revisiting of schedule or subject or whatever.
Mr. Chair, I just want to extend any resource that I can help provide
with my backgrounds in range and dryland grazing and some irrigation stuff. So just I'm here to help if you need me. And I'll go out there with you guys and whatever I can do to help.
Great. And thank you all for being involved in this. This is a really biggie.
Indeed.
It's stepping off the plank. Thank you.
Can we phrase that better, please?
No, I think that's
no?
Where we are.
All right. I do have a
that
couple
really
of
inspired our staff.
Yeah. I have two speaker cards. Danny Merkley, please. Followed by Felice. Welcome to the plank.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman, members. Danny Merkley with the California Farm Bureau. Don't know where to start here. First, at lunch, I told Ben that not to expect to see my nice presentation on the dairy thing for his bill. I was joking. And actually, when you talk about outreach, your staff has been outreaching to Farm Bureau, to me personally, and others at Farm Bureau for over a year now, looking at what direction to go here. I would agree this is very aggressive. I'm really not sure to what extent you would be able to manage it any better if you narrowed it down to regions. You can have different issues in different regions, different commodities. One of the challenges that I would suspect staff's going to run into is just other agencies' mud splashing over on them, particularly when you get up into the Scott and the Shasta. Quite a bit with some of the stuff that's been going on with fish and game. Related or not, directly or indirectly, that mud splashes over pretty good. And to an extent, some of the water rights issues coming out of the State Water Board to some extent could create some problems, challenges. I think the two of the key groups, if you will, that can help with that outreach that are very important from a selfish standpoint are the county farm bureaus. Working directly with each of those county farm bureaus is going to be key. And they each have their own personality. Perhaps some of them have multiple personalities. that we don't need that in the record, do we? The other key individuals to work with that can be very, very helpful on this, but this is a difficult one to get a hold of, and that's the county ag commissioners. Because of their interaction in a regulatory and enforcement aspect, as well as a promote and protect hat that they wear with the Department of Food and Ag, the challenge there, and I worked with them for over 9.5 years from within Cal EPA, is that each county ag commissioner has a very different charge depending on the politics within the county. The Secretary of Food and Ag has oversight responsibility over the county ag commissioner. The director of the Department of Pesticide Regulation has oversight responsibility over the county ag commissioner. The Board of Supervisors are required in statute to appoint somebody to that position that has all the necessary licenses that are given to them by DPR and CDFA. However, at the end of the day, the county ag commissioner answers to those five county supervisors. On any given Tuesday, if they can't count to three, they're looking for a new job. And those are the folks that are going to dictate to that ag commissioner to what extent they get involved, to what extent they're comfortable having them get involved to assist you and or to assist the agricultural folks that they interact with. But they truly are a very good interface between you and the ag community when and if they can do that. But it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all. You might get two or three or four county ag commissioners that are willing or able to do it, and you may have some that aren't. And if you try to force it, it turns into a real ugly food fight. That's a little more than I intended to say. But again, I'm encouraged by the dialogue that we've had with your staff to this point, and I anticipate it to continue. Looking at some of the different regions that I'm dealing with, I was in the Central Coast yesterday at their board meeting. And it's no secret, but I don't need to point fingers, but there are some processes that have worked very, very well. I don't necessarily like the outcomes, but I very much appreciate the openness and the way they've approached working and reaching out to not only agriculture, but the environmental justice community, the environmental community, and other stakeholders. And there are others that have taken a command and control, and we know better than you how it needs to be approached. And at the end of the day, that is a lot more costly. It's a very poor use of public resources, and it's very resource extensive for the regulated community too, because of all the work they have to do to try and combat some of those things. So I would commend your staff for the approach that they're taking so far, I'm relatively pleased with the selection of the Center for Collaborative Policy. Even though we don't like some of the outcomes that are coming out of that in the Central Valley region, it has been a very good process, a very open process. And I'll stop there.
Great.
Because I talk too much sometimes. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
My name is Felice Pace. I'm with the North Water Chair for the North Group of the Sierra Club. I support this regional scope because of the equity issues primarily. Really, some of what I've seen in this TMDL process and in these initial waivers with the Shest and Scott, they're really different waivers, and they're not even comparable, the two of those. And it's like, why? You know, every place is different. Every farm is unique. Every individual is unique. But we have to be equitable under the law, too. And it seems like certain people, you know, or certain groups or certain valleys or whatever, or certain communities are better able to, you know, the way we say, work the regulatory process, you know, and really manage the regulators. I mean, if you're a producer, that's one of the things you think about, managing regulators, you know. It's standard. In this case, with agriculture, you know, I reviewed this morning, and another fellow talked about Chesapeake Bay, you know, but whether we're talking about Chesapeake Bay, the Everglades, the Great Lakes, the Klamath River Basin, the North Coast, you know, the wine country, I mean, ag is a major source of impairment. And for 30 years, I mean, the Clean Water Act's been around for about 35 years now, I think. I lose track of the years now that I'm 64 or so, but it's about 35 years, and it's only in the last 5 years that, you know, we've really even begun to regulate agriculture under the Clean Water Act. So sure, it's going to be hard. You know, one of the things I wanted to, that is interesting, and I'm not against it, you know, is, you know, I wonder how much the contract is for with the center. And I'm sure they're good. I haven't worked with them before. I'm sure they're good at process. It's pretty standard, you know, process. But you got to learn how to do it, and some people are professional at it. You know, earlier today we had Holly. And Holly's saying, oh, we're only going to be able to take off 5 out of 27 things that we need to do because we don't have the staffing. So I don't know. We may need to think about, you know, getting some training for some of our staff members in some of these techniques of facilitation, because I'm not sure that we're going to be able to. This is a big one, and, you know, maybe it makes sense. But if the expectation is, you know, there's a question of expectations. If the expectation is this is going to mean there's going to be less conflict, no. You know, that's, I predict that expectation will not be fulfilled. There's going to be a lot of conflict. There's going to be a lot of resistance. Any community that hasn't been regulated that is going to be regulated, and this one is very effective. And we've had lawsuits over the TMDLs from, you know, organizations that represent agriculture. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be easy no matter how we go about doing it. And, you know, stakeholder processes, I don't like them as much as I used to because, you know, I'm a volunteer, you know. And it's really tough when you're a volunteer. The agency people are all paid. You know, a lot of the industrial people are paid. I'm not paid. So, you know, that's a tough one for us. It's almost like creating an level playing field for certain communities that are not as funded as other communities in itself. You know, we're going to be, we being the TMDL, you know, litigants, the environmental community on the North Coast, we're somewhat organized, we're disparate, we're independent, you know, but we're also we also coordinate, and we're going to be pushing. Because, as I told you this morning, this is where the rubber hits the road, and we've invested decades. You mentioned decades earlier. We've invested decades in this stuff, and a lot of us. And we're going to be pushing for discrete geographic areas, sub-watershed associations, whatever, that can be monitored in terms of the actual parameter that is the impairment, so that we have performance criteria and we have milestones. Because I think we all know we're going to wind up with a I agree with the guy who said there's no voluntary programs. It's not voluntary, but we're going to give people a lot of choices. We're going to have, you know, low-threat people go off, you know, pretty much unregulated. They don't need to be regulated. Great, you know. And so we're going to need to have some criteria that we can measure by, whereby if they're not met, some performance criteria, then we go to a higher level. It's going to have to be something like that, I think, to really satisfy the law. That's my input on it so far.
Thanks, Felice.
Any questions? No?
We have any other board member comments or staff comments? No? Seeing none, thank you. Taking an inventory of my agenda, it looks like we are just about finished up, with the exception of any other board member requests for future agenda items or any other particular items of interest. Yeah. Mr. Corbett?
Well, I'm going to sort of abuse this agenda item. I don't want a formal agenda item on it, but one thing I was struck, and it looks like staff is starting to get a handle on it, where state board changes for basin plans, you go to the state website link. But the way the basin plan has evolved and the complexity now, I think we need to look at how our website is organized, because all it would take is three attorneys actually for the whole thing, because they can't figure it out, and enormous staff time. And we need some way, I don't know whether someone can press a button, Klamath Basin, Eel River or something, but it strikes me our website organization is not up to the complexity of our documents now. And even though we're short of staff, if we can solve that, we'll solve a lot of public inquiries. And so just think about it. That's
We will take a look at that. Our website is the way it is laid out is prescribed by the state board.
Right.
And it is the end result of a committee action.
Well, you've always managed to discourage the idea. But I do hope we have something that the public can reasonably use.
Yes, we have some control.
And it would be hard now for me as a board member even to just find stuff, and it's just getting more complex.
Mr. Massey.
Mr. Chair, can I abuse the item again?
Abuse?
There are a couple of things, because the permission to abuse granted. That's good.
Yeah. he didn't grant me that. You
know? A couple of things, because it's coming up in terms of divisions, and I know in other areas, but particularly in the area, excuse me, of sewers in the western Sonoma County, that we need somehow a greater cooperation with the county, that if we could somehow direct our staff to reach out or whatever, so that we can do some joint stuff with the county, because the county really is, the, in many respects, the administrative officer for what is a state law. So, I guess this is an abuse directed at the executive officer. Can we look at coming up with some kind of a joint committee, some kind of a joint letterhead, so that because one of the things that's happening, the assistant AEO, the assistant executive officer, and I are going to a public meeting the Monday the 23rd, and one of the things that people say is, no, it isn't human stuff in the river. Well, okay, yeah, it is. It's not the weasels and the bears. We killed them a long time ago. But they keep pointing to us, and they point to the county, and wherever there is an opportunity, they exploit that. So perhaps you could do that. And I think the other thing that goes along with this, we know the TMDL is coming. We're going to get the TMDL. But there are some things in the TMDL which, frankly, you could sit here and say right now is going to be there. I mean, it's just, we know that's going to be there. Is there some way that we can get early implementation of those things that we know are going to be there? I mean, this isn't going away. So why do we wait until that TMDL? I think that is, you hear that frequently from our public, and I think it's a legitimate request. So is there some way that we can do that? And having abused item 14, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Massey. On the Russian River pathogen TMDL, we have, as staff, put together initial thoughts on what we see as the most likely sources for bacteria and pathogens in the river, and have started to have some early internal discussions about how to proceed. There is also a meeting that we've been invited to this Monday that Supervisor Carrillo has put together with Sonoma County Water. This is follow-up on the porta potties for recreation. So the supervisor is calling together a large group of people to come in and have a dialogue about how much of a problem is recreational use with regard to bacteria loadings, what do we know, and what kind of steps we should take, which I think, I'm hoping, is the first step towards, perhaps as the summer rolls on, some tangible steps towards providing, like, porta potties along the river in the high recreational usage areas. So that's one thing that's moving on ahead, and there are other areas. The big things that we've seen have been the septics and what we can do with the septics in the mid-river recreation. And those are the two things that seem the most tangible to us, along with probably to do some work looking at laterals in the sewered area. Mm-hmm. Just to make sure that those are nice and tight down in Guerneville and other areas. So there's some things that we can do, and we need to have another internal discussion with it. And would it be suitable if we came back to you either individually or to the board in June or August with just some our initial thoughts of what we're finding and what our thoughts are on that early implementation? Mm-hmm. Would that work for you?
That works for me fine. It can be to individuals or it can be to the board, okay, or whatever is your pleasure. Okay. Just that it's I'm seeing, because I am aware that Supervisor Carrillo is working on this and we're working on this, but I think we need to tighten that up a bit. And clearly, as you say, there are things that we know are going to be in that TMDL, so right, why not move on them if we can?
One of the other ideas we have been I think, batting around is in terms of the suggestion of working more closely with the county on septics in particular, has been the idea of when we talk to people at the Mid River, there is a, I think there's an understanding that we are saying that things are going to change with regard to septics, but perhaps a bit of disbelief that we and or the county are going to actually start taking any kind of enforcement actions. And so one of the ideas we've been talking to the county about is, would it be useful for this board and the county board of supervisors to either do some kind of joint resolution or something around that, and that would show and put down the marker from both agencies that times are about to change, kids, and, you know, that to allow the community to start focusing themselves a little bit more crisply on the problems that are confronting them. And so I'll go ahead and take the next steps with the county and maybe come back to you with some options that the county has agreed to.
Certainly, if you need any assistance with that, anything that I can do to help, because I think it's
number.
It is one of those things where they are trying to the general public. It's not that they're reticent. It is not that they appreciate a polluted river. It is that it still comes down to that dollar thing, and they are trying to exploit the schism between us. So if we can join forces, hallelujah. Thank you. And I on abuse number 14.
Anybody else? Okay, with that, I will hit item 17, which just announces the arrangements for our next meeting, which will be on June 22nd and 23rd in Santa Rosa. With that, thank you, everybody. We're adjourned. Thank you.